Hi, podcast listeners. I want to tell you about a podcast called Legends of Sport, co-produced by Legends of Sport and the Los Angeles Times. For the next 16 weeks, Legends of Sport is focusing its lens on the return of the NBA season inside the Orlando bubble with a series of episodes called Restarting the Clock. Our host and NBA Hall of Fame photographer, Andy Bernstein, will be joined by legendary players and coaches, league officials, and members of the sports media. We'll tackle all that goes into restarting this unique season, including training, the abridged finish of the regular season, and the excitement of the playoffs on the road to this year's historic NBA Finals. Right now, I'm going to play you the entire first episode of this Legends of Sport, Restarting the Clock series. In this episode, Andy chats with Tanya Ganguly and Andrew Greif of the LA Times. As you listen, make sure to subscribe to Legends of Sport on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now.
Welcome, everyone, to the Legends of Sport podcast. I'm your host, Andy Bernstein. This is the first episode of a 16-week special edition centered around the restart of the NBA season we are calling Restarting the Clock. It's also the leadoff podcast of our new co-production partnership with the Los Angeles Times. We titled this episode A New Beginning to mark both landmark moments in the history of the NBA and Legends of Sport. The 22 NBA teams that will be completing the pandemic-shortened season have been training in their home facilities, with the exception of the Toronto Raptors, who started their training camp in Florida. They will all move to the bubble the NBA is creating at the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex in Orlando. Games start on July 30th, with playoffs starting in mid-August and continuing through the NBA Finals in mid-October. I am headed to the bubble for the playoffs and finals and will be taking this podcast on the road. Until then, I will continue recording from my secret lair in LA. We are committed to bringing you content that is true to our Legends format with the great guests you've come to expect from our podcast over the past 3 years. Our new partnership with the LA Times will enable us to bring more content and more fantastic guests your way. The coronavirus pandemic has put all of us in all kinds of unexpected positions. I haven't taken a picture since the NBA shut down on March 11th, but I've really enjoyed ramping up this podcast with some timely guests and our Legendary Photographers series. But now it's time to focus our lens on the highly anticipated return of the NBA at the bubble in Orlando. We will be speaking to the legends of the game about historic rivalries, playoff series, and finals. I will have my personal perspective to share with all of you as well. I'm looking forward to getting down to Orlando and getting back to work with my camera. So today, to kick off our new partnership and our new Restarting the Clock series, I'm really happy to have two of the LA Times' best reporters with us today. Tanya Ganguly, who covers the Lakers, and Andrew Greif, who covers the Clippers. I really enjoyed speaking with both of them about the state of both franchises, the league, and players' joint commitment to keep social justice issues front and center as the league starts back going, and their views on how things will go in the bubble. These are uncharted waters for all of us, and I'm really happy to bring this episode to you. Enjoy my conversation with Tanya and Andrew, and as always, I'll see you on the backside. Welcome, Tanya and Andrew, to the first episode of the co-production of the Legends of Sport podcast with the Los Angeles Times. Great to connect with you both and be part of the LA Times family. So this has been a pretty bizarre season for all of us, especially in LA. I can't remember one that's had more storylines than this one, starting with the Lakers' preseason trip to China and all the drama there. David Stern passing away in January, and of course the sudden tragedy of losing Kobe and Gigi and everyone on the helicopter that horrible Sunday in late January. And let's add in both the Lakers and Clippers being a bona fide championship contender. I'm sure you will agree that we were all salivating over the prospect of a hallway conference finals. So just when it seemed like the season was back on track and we were all looking towards a great playoff run for both teams, the pandemic hit and everything was shut down on March 11th. The rest of the sports world followed the NBA's lead, and we have all been without live sports for almost 4 months. So enough of that lead-in. Tanya, I'm going to start with you. How have you been dealing with all this and doing your job the best you can with everything stopped, like fully stopped on March 11th?
Yeah, you know, it's been very strange. There's been a lot of different things happening. I mean, of course, a few weeks ago, you know, I've been sort of trying to track what the Lakers have been up to and all of that. But then a few weeks ago, when, you know, there were protests all over the nation about police brutality and racism, and a lot of it, I kind of was put into action with helping us cover that stuff, which there was some overlap between the Lakers and that also because Danny Green went downtown, which is kind of where I was doing a lot of my reporting,
right,
and participated in one of the protests. So, you know, I mean, it's been, I can't believe it's been almost 4 months since we've all seen a basketball game, but yeah. I guess it went by a little faster than I thought it would.
Yeah, well, not for me. I haven't taken a picture since March 11th, so I'm itching. Let me stay on that subject for a second. How was that pivot going from sports to news? I mean, had you done news before in your lifetime as a reporter?
You know, there's occasionally you're covering a sporting event where something will happen and you have to make that switch and start helping out. So I've done a little bit of it before. It's pretty, the same, the principles are all the same, right? Like you're talking to people, trying to get information, find out stories. It's just, the people that you're talking to are not people who are, you know, it's almost, they're not people who are talking to reporters every day. You feel like it's a chore to have to do it. They're just people who are doing something and on many occasions are happy that you want to know more about what they're doing.
Right.
So it was interesting and it was a different experience for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I saw your byline on a few stories and it was pretty incredible. So Andrew, you wrote a story recently, which I loved because it's kind of a prelude to me going into the bubble about what the day-to-day life of an NBA player would be like in Orlando. Right. It was fascinating. I know you probably had to do a lot of research on that because you haven't been in the bubble yet. But from everything we've heard about what it's going to be like and what the NBA has said, what do you think the biggest challenges are going to be for the players and coaches? I mean, for one of, could possibly be for both of our teams or one of our teams could get to the finals. You know, it could be 3.5 months down there in Orlando. So what do you think the biggest challenges are?
Something that the Clippers, when they spoke today on different media calls, Landry Shamet, the guard, and Coach Doc Rivers, they both mentioned something that a lot of players have brought up, which is just the mental side of things. I mean, obviously there are so many concerns with the physical ability of the players and coaches. If you think about the potential for injuries after the long layoff or obviously COVID-19, that's the whole reason why you're even doing this. But the idea that, you know, there's only a few golf courses on that Disney campus. There's only so many activities you can do, only so many DJ sets you can probably attend in the players' lounge. Yeah. And there's a real sense of, you know, I think cabin fever could set in no matter the incentive. You know, obviously the Clippers have this opportunity to advance to the first, not only NBA finals in the franchise history, but the first Western Conference finals. They've never even been there.
I know.
So they have,
believe me, I know.
For.
I've been covering them for 35 years. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Even with all that incentive, there is still going to be on these off days, just an enormous amount of what do I do today?
Right.
And I think that's something that players, even though these regulations and policies have been out here for now almost 2 weeks or so, I think players are still grappling with that of like, okay, what's it really going to look like in the middle of September?
Yeah, the jury's out on that one. we have some photographers down there like shooting the setup now. This will come out just as the teams are arriving in Orlando. And, you know, it's a lot of unknowns down there. I mean, I want to put this next question to both of you, and Tanya, maybe you could take it first. If you were to put yourself in Adam Silver's shoes, like right now, before this whole thing started, what would be like your top three concerns?
I mean, I think the top concern is that the situation in Florida gets so bad that you can't possibly create a safe environment. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked to Rob Palenka yesterday, and he was saying that the idea is that they're going to have create a space that's safer than the outside world. So that's fine, but they are going to have several people coming in and out of the bubble, including Adam Silver. Mm-hmm. They're going to be hotel workers. They're going to be, you know, it can't be a truly secluded space.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're here in LA, like the virus is making a big comeback in LA, mm-hmm. because things are open in Florida. You know, so I think that should be, you know, the NBA at one point was saying that in order to return, they'll have to see cases going down. I think, like a lot of people in society, they just got tired of waiting for that to happen and have tried to figure out. I mean, this protocols that they put in place are very strict. Mm-hmm. As you read in Andrew's story, like it's not going to be easy to do anything when they're out there. But even with that, I mean, we've seen the MLS tried to create a bubble, and they've had coronavirus cases inside the bubble, mm-hmm. From players who initially tested negative, and then once the virus incubated, tested positive a few days later. So, you know, I just think that's a huge variable, and that would definitely be at the top of my list of concerns if I were Adam Silver.
Yeah, I hear you. It's got to be some sleepless nights leading into this thing for sure. Andrew, what do you think? I mean, I know you'll probably echo what Tanya said, but does anything else come to mind for you?
Yeah, I think the immediate concern for me would be the cases and keeping everyone as COVID-free as possible, because as the league has acknowledged, one positive test will not shut down mm-hmm. this thing. It's going to take an unknown threshold of cases to potentially pause the season again. Mm-hmm. That's the immediate thing. But I think I'd be worried if I were Adam Silver about the possibility of players leaving the bubble feeling maybe disenfranchised with the league's level of discourse with the union, with players and hearing them out. I think that the NBA, rightfully so, and the players have a lot of goodwill toward each other, and they work very well together. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul and Adam Silver, they probably have, I think they have regular dialogue anyway. They sound like they're pretty friendly. Mm-hmm. I think that they discussed some of the All-Star Weekend festivities this year. And that there's a real amount of cooperation that happens that a lot of leagues do not have. But I think you saw with some of these players grappling with whether they wanted to play or not because of the social justice issues. They feel like they want to be heard in Orlando. They want to feel like they're not just going there and leaving some of like the protest movement, diverting the attention away from it. And so I would just be worried if players go down there and they say, we thought, you know, we were going to have a wider platform. We thought we'd have all these different ways where we could, get our voices heard. And then for that not to come true. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be the case. You've seen the way the NBA has bent over backward to say that their core central goal of this is to make sure that social justice is at the forefront. Mm-hmm. But I think they have such a good working relationship as for that relationship to go on in the future. You'd want that to players leave their thing. Okay, yeah, the NBA was in lockstep with us and not thinking the other way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, to that point, didn't the NBA say they're going to put Black Lives Matters on the court? They're going to paint it on the court. The players are going to be allowed to put social justice messages on their uniforms instead of their names. I mean, it seems like they're in lockstep with each other, which is a great thing. I know, Chris Paul, as you do really well, and of course, Adam, and they do have a great relationship. And I think Michelle Roberts as well. They all want it to go really well. I mean, on top of the bubble thing, you know, there's the whole social justice issue that needs to be in the forefront. And both seem committed to that. So, you know, moving forward, I hope that happens. So let me ask you both something. How weird is it going to be to have these guys? I mean, if you were the players, like to be playing in front of nobody, I mean, empty arenas. They're talking about doing some really interesting things graphically and whatever to enhance the experience of playing in front of an empty arena. But it's got to be really bizarre, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, it's going to be really strange. Like, LeBron, I remember LeBron's reaction initially to this idea. When I had asked him, like, the day that it sort of started coming up and the NBA was looking into this, and his first reaction was no. Yeah. He's like, I've never played without fans. I'm not doing, like, that sounds crazy. It sounds terrible. And I'm sure he's still, you know, I'm sure, like, there is still some of that feeling for them. But I remember a few weeks ago, I talked to Danny Green, and he was like, listen, at this point, whatever it takes, we want to play.
Yeah.
So and all those, like, what's normal doesn't really matter as much anymore, because they're at least finding a way to do this, to play basketball again, which they all miss so much.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me a little bit of what the Dream Team practices were like, you know, because those were like full on crazy games. And I got to see a couple of them, but they didn't care if there was anybody watching or not. You know, these guys, you know, they lace them up and they're ready to go. And when, you know, the season is on the line, you're trying to make the playoffs or you're trying to advance, you know, in the Lakers and Clippers case, I mean, I don't know if it really matters if there are fans there, but for us, for me being there, I have no idea what that's going to be like. So that's going to be interesting to be covering.
That's what Doc said today. He said, if you put two guys in a boxing ring, was his analogy, they're going to fight. They're gonna really go at it. Everyone's going to want to win.
Yeah.
If you put 10 players on a court, he kind of continued. There's going to be a spirit of competition that comes from that.
Yeah.
That said, I've thought about it a lot. Remember that New York Knicks game maybe 4 or 5 years ago where they didn't pump in any ambient noise? There was no music. Right. There was no and all the players said how awful it was and how they hated it. I feel like for the first maybe week or so down there, you're going to get a lot of reactions like that. It just feels so unnatural to play in those circumstances. I think from then players will just get used to it. But at first, it's going to be just an amazing transition.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll be able to hear a lot of trash talking that we don't normally get to hear, but that should be interesting. So the whole idea of home court advantage just goes out the window. I mean, you know, traditionally teams are playing all year to get that first seed, you know, or being the first four for the first round or whatever. And, you know, the Lakers, more than anybody, you know, I think more than anybody, maybe Milwaukee, were really playing for that first seed to have, you know, the home court advantage. Do you think that makes a difference? Or in this case, it can't, because we don't, you know, we won't have that. But how much is a home court advantage going to mean to a team to win the championship?
I mean, it's a shame for the Lakers, who were trying to get it, who wanted, you know, who were at the top of the West. They're not going to they're not going to have that advantage that they were trying. I think it's an even bigger deal for the Bucks, though, because the Lakers kind of have this, and you know this, like, the Lakers kind of have this sort of home when they're on the road. It's usually at worst neutral, you know, there's so many Laker fans everywhere that they kind of benefit from that. I mean, home court advantage is pretty much gone now. Like, they're not planning to do anything. They're not planning to do anything competition wise to bring back that advantage for the teams that have earned it. I don't think there's anything you really can do, you know, without fans there. It just takes that element away. And I think it's going to be so interesting to find out. I think what we're going to find out is, like, exactly how important that energy in the crowd really is to players. There are teams that play so well at home and so poorly on the road. And, you know, it'll be interesting to find out, like, how much of, you know, like, just what exactly the toll is for being outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah. I mean, players feed off of that. We know that, right? And I mean, all the greats have always talked about having the greatest fans, you know, whoever they happen to play for, because they feel it, that energy. Kobe always talked about that. You know, Tanya, I'm going to stay with you for a second. So Rob Pelinka mentioned that the other day that he wasn't sure, like, at this moment, who's going to be on his final roster. He knows, and we all know, that Avery Bradley chose to opt out for family reasons. So to replace him, they brought in J.R. Smith. So how do you view that? Do you see that as you know, how do you see that for the Lakers? It's going to help them, or is it stay the same, or does it really matter? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's from a basketball perspective, it's tough for them to lose Avery Bradley. He was so important to their sort of, like, their defensive identity, I think. they have a lot of guys on their team who have the capability to be really good defenders. For some reason, having Avery out there was such a big boost for them. It's because of his tenacity defensively. Mm-hmm. I was really struck by, you know, in talking to, we've done, as of recording, 3 Zoom calls this week with Rob Polinka and Frank Vogel and Alex Caruso today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was really struck by the empathy that everybody had for Avery's situation, that, you know, he's got a young son with a respiratory condition, and they truly were understanding of him wanting to make this decision for the sake of his family. But it's definitely going to be tough for them to replace him. I think Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was somebody that filled in when Avery was hurt. Mm-hmm. And obviously got a lot of talent on their team. So it's not like losing Avery is the end of the world, but and I think one other thing that helps, I wrote about this last week, is that they're not going to have several weeks to figure out what to do. It's not going to be, you know, when you lose someone to an injury during the basketball season, right? It's so sudden. Mm-hmm. There's no time to really figure out what you're going to do and practice it and all that stuff. Now they're going to be going into this situation knowing that they don't have this player and they're going to be able to prepare for it. J.R. Smith is somebody that they tried to sign back in March. Mm-hmm. They considered signing. They brought him in for a workout and decided to sign Deion Waiters instead. He's somebody that's very familiar with LeBron, obviously, which I think will help his transition onto this team.
Yeah, yeah. So, Andrew, the Clippers, I've been shooting the Clippers since they moved in 84. I don't know if you knew that, but I go way back with the Clippers. The prospect of them being good at the same time the Lakers are good, I mean, I never thought, honestly, I would see that because not – to take away from either team, but you know, the fact that both are colliding at the same time, it's super cool for me. But they're very intriguing to me because, you know, I've shot them all year until everything shut down, and they had second best record in the West, right? But in my opinion, I didn't see Paul George and Kawhi play enough together to really get a strong opinion. Like, yeah, they can really, you know, go for the ring. I mean, how do you feel about it?
It was, from the very start of training camp, when Kawhi Leonard was sitting out and Paul George was sitting out because of various injuries, Paul's shoulders and Kawhi, kind of the long run of last year's playoffs, mm-hmm. They didn't really play together until the middle of November. And then from there on, it was barely hit or miss because Kawhi would rest on back-to-backs. And then Paul George had hamstring issues in January and then again the next month. And so it really wasn't until, I would say, after the signing of Reggie Jackson in late February, when you really got a window, and it's basically a 10 or 12 game window of what the Clippers could really be. Mm-hmm. And I think central to that is seeing how Kawhi and Paul George play together. So for, I would say 2 weeks, it seemed like there was a better sense of their combined potential, not just of how they could play when they're at top gear, because of course we know that they can go for 40 apiece as they did in December against Minnesota. But just seeing how they interact with the rest of the teammates, allowing guys to get to their spots while not sacrificing the ability for Paul and Kawhi to attack. I saw for once kind of the all the gears kind of click into place, and they won, I believe it was 7 of their last 8 before everything shut down, mm-hmm. and playing really well. And I think that Kawhi is still kind of the number one on that team, but Paul George, you were seeing him get really comfortable playing off the ball, finding his spots, you know, going from, I think his experience playing with Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City was primed him for this because he's, mm-hmm. he's not the career long first option who now has to play second banana. He knows how to do this. Mm-hmm. And, it was pretty impressive. Now the loss to the Lakers was the blip of that run to end the, you know, in early March. But I, for once I was kind of like, okay, if people wondered all year what the hype was about, I think you're seeing it in a sustained manner, finally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just a tease. Mm-hmm. It's just a tease, only a few games.
Yeah. How do you guys feel about how quickly it's going to take them to just get back in the groove again? Like to get, I don't know if they can get to where they were, you know, right before the pandemic shut down, but is it going to take just this week or week and a half down in Orlando before they start playing games, or Are you looking, you think they're going to kind of coast through those eight games and just wait to the playoffs to kind of get into the next gear? I mean, what's your feeling? Tanya, what do you think?
I think that they are, I think that they're going to try to have a balance. They're going to try to strike a balance there because, you know, they want to get back into the habit of winning games, mm-hmm. Which I think that's something that I remember them talking about early on. Actually, I remember this conversation going back to my first year covering the team when the conversation was all about, are they going to tank? And there was, you know, there's this line of thinking that once you start, that winning is a habit. And once you start doing it, you will get used to it and you will know how to continue to do it. And mm-hmm. So, you know, Frank Vogel said that they are going to, they're going to try to win the games, but they also understand that there are safety issues, you know, like just in terms of the non-COVID health aspects of the players. They've been off for a very long time. Mm-hmm. They don't want to push it. Yeah. They don't want to push any guy's bodies into a situation that'll be tough for them. So, or that will cause an injury that would affect the team all over again. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think they're going to try to strike a balance with that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that there's been so much talk recently, but especially this year, about this being a Lakers town, being a Clippers town. You know, I don't like to get into that conversation really, but, and you hear opinions from everybody, right? How do you guys kind of stay out of that and just do your reporting and just, you know, because there's so much chatter everywhere. And you even see it on billboards now that, you know, whose town it is and stuff.
Well, I think you even see it in the locker room post game or on the court when they're playing each other. I think it's kind of fun to, it's fun to get, especially the Clippers have, I mean, I don't know if, I feel like, Andrew, don't you think like they have a lot of fun with like just being the underdog and say, and like when they're playing the Lakers and all, and they're winning and suddenly they can't hear the Laker fans anymore. Like it's, mm-hmm. it's kind of the way that the teams are this year. It's, I think it's been a really fun rivalry to watch.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I would say that how people go back and listen to all the pregame comments before the first meeting in October, even before the Christmas Day game where, you know, people would say, oh, it's just another game and all, and they downplay, mm-hmm. and then go watch Patrick Beverley in the last minute of that Christmas Day game and watch and Montrezl Harrell too, and watch the emotion that's coming out of as they're playing to the crowd, right. as they're flexing, as they're screaming after both Clippers victories. I mean, if you think it doesn't matter a little bit more, then you're just kidding yourself. Mm-hmm. And clearly it's the case.
Yeah.
You see it in the Clippers pregame introductions where it says, it's a wink and a nod at the Lakers across town. It says, you know, street lights over spotlights and right. we over me. So they are definitely, as much as they don't really want to bring up the Lakers, they're definitely acknowledging their presence mm-hmm. and the Lakers' tradition of success and basically leveraging that as, hey, we're the scrappy underdogs. If you feel like that in Los Angeles, come to our side. So mm-hmm. yeah. It's been pretty fun. But yeah, even I, as a transplant, it's been fascinating to see the, you know, the split, the divide and where people stand. Mm-hmm. I've told the story before, but even my dentist one time, I first met him and he asked what I did and I told him and he just said reflexively, well, I'm a Lakers fan. And I was like,
as he was drilling it to you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, that's just how people feel, that even if you say Clippers at all, they have to let you know whether they agree or disagree.
Right. Right. That's true. My son, who I don't know if you guys met, but my son now is 25. So when he was like in elementary school going into middle school, he would wear Clippers gear every day, you know, and I work for both teams and I have to be, you know, impartial and all that, but he would come to games. You come to Laker games in Clipper gear, to the point where he got the name of being Clipper Mike. Everyone, and even the Laker people called him Clipper Mike. So, you know, we lived that in our house. It was kind of interesting. So last question for you guys. Well, we got two more questions, but the last real question is, there was a story today about if whoever wins the championship, should an asterisk be attached to it, you know, NBA champion. What do you guys feel about that idea?
Well, it's not, I mean, there has to be, you know, this is not the same. These aren't the same circumstances that every team, you know, that every other championship has been won under. Mm-hmm. This has never happened before. I think that this creates a situation that could be, I mean, people ask me, like somebody asked me the other day, like, are the Lakers for sure? How do you feel about the Lakers in the finals, better or worse than before? I'm like, I have no idea. I have no idea. Yeah. We don't know what any of these teams are going to be like when they get back together. We don't know who's going to handle the quarantine mm-hmm. well and who's not going to handle it well. What teams are going to get sick of each other? What teams are going to, you know, what teams need that crowd noise the most? Fuel off of that energy? Like, who's going to lose players because they tested positive for coronavirus? I mean, mm-hmm. there's so many variables. Who's going to have an injury because of the long layoff? I mean, there's so many variables. I think this is just ripe for chaos. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I mean, that's not to say it's not going to be an incredible accomplishment for whoever wins the title, because it will be. They'll be doing it under some very difficult circumstances, but mm-hmm. it's an asterisk just means that it's not like the rest of them.
Yeah, right.
You know, that there's something different about this one. So I think there has to be.
Was there an asterisk after the, what was it, the 99 season, whatever season that was, the Spurs won the championship?
I think if you ask Phil Jackson, there is,
right? Right. Remember Phil talking about it, but I don't remember if there was an actual printed asterisk after that.
I don't know. I don't know if that is actually printed. I think this is more of a philosophical asterisk.
Yeah, very philosophical. Well, very good. Yeah.
And I feel like the idea of the asterisk is always brought up as a bad thing, you know? I feel like...
Yeah, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be, because I think, to Tanya's point, it does need to be signified as this is different. And mm-hmm. different doesn't necessarily mean illegitimate. It just means that this is far, far different than anything else that we've ever encountered. And mm-hmm. and this has been brought up several times, and Doc Rivers mentioned it today. He said he talked to Adam Silver about this recently, that the winner of this should deserve not just a title or an asterisk, but like a gold star, because it's, you know, it's like an endurance test as much as it is a basketball game.
Yeah. Like in Purple Heart levels. Or something. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
It's it should be remembered. Some people will say, oh, throw it out.
Yeah.
Throw it out, whatever. But you have to remember it one way or the other.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking of young fans now that will be telling their kids about that crazy pandemic season, you know, and they went to a bubble and all kinds of, they didn't play in front of fans. I mean, it's crazy. I remember my dad telling me stories of, you know, about during the war, and they didn't have guys to play baseball and all that stuff, you know, and it just seems so foreign to me, but we're actually living through that right now. So God willing, we will live through it, and they'll get through the bubble, and somebody will be hoisting the Larry O'Brien trophy in front of nobody, but you know, it'll be pretty
each
amazing.
Other, their teammates.
Yes, exactly. So both of you guys are headed to the bubble. Are you going at the same time, or what's happening with that? Are you both going?
I don't think we quite know the answer to that yet. Mm-hmm. We're still waiting for the NBA has to decide who, they're only letting 10 reporters into the bubble.
Wow. Okay.
So,
gotcha.
So they've got to decide who those 10 outlets will be.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, then there's the option of the outside the bubble covering the teams from outside the bubble, but in Orlando. So I think that's still sort of being sorted out.
TBD. Yes, I get you. Yeah.
But I think we both expect to be there at some, if not at the beginning, because depending on the NBA schedule, we do expect to be there at some point for a decent stretch of the time.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're both in the bubble when I'm there. Otherwise I got to wave to you from inside, you know, it's like one of those like boy in the bubble things, you know, but listen guys, I really, really appreciate you guys doing this today and leading off our first episode. Of our partnership together and this 16-week block of restarting the clock. So be well, be safe. I know I'll see you somewhere virtually or read or whatever, but hopefully I'll see you guys in person at some point down in Orlando. So thanks again for today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Be safe, guys. Thank you. Well, I was really happy to get the opportunity to chat with Tanya and Andrew about the state of the Lakers and Clippers leading into the NBA restart in the Orlando bubble this week. Such great perspectives from both of those veteran journalists. Hope I get a chance to see them in Orlando at some time this summer. What a great way to kick off our 16-week series called Restarting the Clock. We will be releasing a new episode every Tuesday for the remainder of the NBA restart and have great guests and topics lined up. Once again, we at Legends of Sport are very excited about our new co-production partnership with the Los Angeles Times. Now you can find our podcast on their app as well as online, as well as your favorite podcast platform. Please continue to follow us, our Instagram at Legends of Sport, Twitter at Legends_of Sport, our blog, legendsofsport.blog, and our Legends of Sport channels on TikTok and YouTube. Thanks everyone for listening and downloading. See you next week with episode 2 of our Restarting the Clock series on the Legends of Sport podcast. Take care and stay safe.
You just heard a recent episode from Legends of Sport, hosted by Andy Bernstein. Subscribe to Legends of Sport on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now.